I can remember the actual first visit was to a doctor who's since retired. Bertram, I think, was his name, but I don't think I've got it quite right. But why I went there, I haven't a notion. Obviously, something was troubling me, but it's all gone now.
I remember I met you one day in the grounds in Milltown Park last year, and I said hello to you because I hadn't seen you for a while, and you looked at me, and I thought, oh, Des doesn't remember my name. But you immediately said, you'll have to tell me your name because I'm not remembering people's names very well.
I'm very proactive like that. And usually I do remember the face. And why should I be embarrassed about the fact that I've got Alzheimer's? The other person could be quite upset.
Oh,
have I done something on him? Have I upset him or anything like that? So it works. If I say, oh, I'm sorry, I'm suffering from Alzheimer's or my memory is gone, something like that, can you tell me your name again? And then we get into a conversation because immediately the shock of not being remembered changes into, oh, the poor fella, what's happened?
When did you discover then that, when did you get the actual diagnosis? Do you remember that? Can you remember back to anything at all, or is it very much, what is it like for you now?
Well, to put days and dates on it, no, I can't do that kind of thing. And no, I can't remember why I took the decision to do something like go to the hospital. I can remember that I had to have a brain scan and then come back to see the doctor afterwards. And the doctor's diagnosis was that I was suffering from short-term memory loss, was what he described, is how it's described. But it was that an arteriosclerosis in the brain. And the result was that the ordinary movement of your own activities, your own thinking, to storage in the back of the brain was impeded. So as soon as I'd finished the job, I forgot all about it and I went off to the next. It's very embarrassing. You start a conversation with someone, you get their name, and then you went to say goodbye, the name is gone again. I go off and meet someone else and they say, where were you? Might be an hour down the road, or might be only minutes down the road. I say, oh, I had a conversation with... You feel very awkward.
Yeah.
Just not been able to, recount the moments in the day and what's happened and so on. But I find that for my own behaviour, it's my best shot at dealing with it is to kind of say, I'm afraid all those things go out of my head or something like that. It'll come back later on, but I can't get it now.
I'm interested in exploring what that feels like. First of all, when you did know that you had Alzheimer's, like, were you shocked? Were you devastated? Or how did you react? Can you remember that?
Well, I don't do devastation much, but I do retire into my shell and kind of incubate and see where am I going to go from here. I'd always known I had difficulty remembering. My mother would have said when I came home from visiting someone, says, you never have any news coming back. I would have heard it all. I would have been there. Who was there? Well, I remember Auntie May was there now. And was Johnny with her? Johnny? Who's Johnny? Johnny, her husband.
I would have thought that was just a man thing, but let my prejudice go on.
Well, it may be a man thing. That one is not. But my mother certainly would have thought that it wasn't so. That I just seemed not to take in anything going on around. And it would be true. I couldn't remember themes of novels and things like that. And one of the areas now that I'm affected most is I can't read a novel because I can't remember the characters, the connections and all the rest. A friend of mine in the house, Kennedy O'Brien, who's a great English reader, gave me a lovely little book some time ago called The Uncommon Reader. The Uncommon Reader being Queen Elizabeth in England, and a little story about her discovering through a page boy the joy of reading. So there's only the Queen and her page boy in the story. So you'll be able to remember those two characters.
Wow.
That was great.
That's
absolutely
great.
Excellent. And he gave me another one more recently by a Japanese authoress called The Housekeeper and the Professor.
Yes.
Just a charming book. Absolutely charming. But again, just The Housekeeper and the Professor. Everyone else, her son, the housekeeper's son also. But that was always in the story. And I absolutely delighted in them and could manage and hold all those together. But, I mean, to take up a good Dickensian novel, Not a hope.
And that's a great thing about being open about it. Once it's out there and said, people can then say to you, this is my name, or, you know, put it into the conversation in some way so that you know. What is it like being you today in the sense of, do you remember yesterday, or when you go now from me today and say by tonight, will you remember that you've done this interview?
I don't know. It's very unpredictable. I remember some things and I don't remember others. I think the things that would have a high emotional charge stay. Things that are business, things that are items of information, disappear very quickly. And names were never very strong an item with me. But I'd remember the face, and the face will come back, and then I'd say, I know who I was with today.
And would all the associations come with that, say, as well?
Oh, how do I know? Certain associations come back anyway. And yes, I mean, I think at the affective level, in many ways, I think I'll be much freer now than I would have been before, because I would have focused more on the knowledge before. Now I just see people and the whole sense of the, you know, the relationship, not in terms of the acts or the deeds, but the affection, the ease, the enjoyment and so on with people. That's there very, very clearly. Yeah.
And I wonder, in terms of, you know, the way through life we meet people and maybe somebody hurts us and we get over it and maybe they say sorry, and, you know, other people that we don't really get on that well with, or they annoy us. Now, is that different for you now, because you don't have those memories of somebody, a provincial moved you here, or, you know, a superior did this to you, or a fellow Jesuit. Is it different like that then? And do you relate differently to people because you've no back history?
I don't think in that way. Because, as I say, the effective content seems to stay on. But at the other hand, I would have always been inclined to say, ah, well, we're all different and these things happen. So I let go of annoyances. I would be good at, you know, picking up again someone that I fell out with or someone that I had an awful row with. I'd be often the one to make the move and say, what on earth got into us the other day? Or something like that, you know? So that's never been a real problem with me. I just know myself that I can get mad with people, and then I'll go back and I'll say, God, I don't know how I behave like that, which I'm sorry. I never worried about saving face. I think because I never really had much of a face. I was no good at football. I couldn't keep up with the lads at school. I couldn't run. I had asthma when I was a kid. So I had to drop out of a lot of things and say, I just can't do these things. So maybe I got used early on to realising I've got my limitations, and then I found I've also got my assets. I was very clever. Everyone wanted my Eckers at school because I had the answers to the sums right.
My own father had Alzheimer's, and he had a personality change dramatically. He was a very gentle man. His language was very circumspect, and he ended up with a change of quite, you know, cursing language, and he became angry for a period of time. Is that a stage you've experienced? Or did you experience any change in that way so far?
The change for me was in the opposite direction. I found that I got upset very little, except when I felt I didn't know what to do. Then I got upset, just not knowing what to do. I found my ease and affection and, what we say, patience with people has just risen enormously. I don't get upset with things.
You mentioned to me when we were talking earlier about a friend of yours whom you do retreat work with, which we'll talk about in a moment. But you were saying at the beginning you noticed a change there and that you had a learning process around that. Tell us about that.
I don't remember that now.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? I'll remind you what you said was that you noticed when you were working with her at the beginning, you would get, and you've worked together for years, that you started to get agitated about things.
Yes. That really was the sense that of feeling, I don't understand what she said. We're not understanding one another. And I would have always been wanting to have clarity. But it was really that I was needing too much security altogether. So that she was kind of bedeviled by my further questions or pauses, and the work never got done. So we did have to straighten that out.
Yeah, you said you spoke to her and you realised that when you reflected on it yourself that you were probably getting a little bit worried about, if I don't get on top of things, this is all going to fall apart.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the anxiety at the early stages was high. Not been able to remember, not been able to remember that either in detail. But I know that there was a time of considerable confusion when I'd be saying, I know how to get, like finding directions. I'm Dubliner, born and bred, lived all my life and love walking around the city. Now I can't. Someone says to me, how do I get to Mespel Road? And I say, oh, Mespel Road, yeah. And I would find I couldn't do it. Yeah. I know, but I can't articulate it. And that upsets me. And sometimes then I feel I don't want to admit it. So that upsets me even more. But I'm getting used to that.
And how do you deal with those kind of frustrations? Because they are significant.
I deal with them, first of all, by admitting them. But I also deal with them then. I get out my maps and I have a look at them again and refresh my memory. Like the map of Dublin City. I say, I couldn't place Waterloo Road the other day. Now, where is it? And then I'll get it and say, OK, I'll try to remember that. I'm just too practical-minded. like someone said to me, Des, you don't do drama, do you?
And do you think that's important, that you don't do drama, that you keep things in a perspective for yourself with awareness?
Well, for me, it has proved very important. I find it's a terrible nuisance. Everything takes twice or four times as long to do as it used to do because I go on wrong tracks and I have to retrace and I have to start again and I have to check up what I've done. But now I just take it that, okay, that's where I am. Is the job worth doing? I want to get the job done. Is it done okay? It is. Okay. So it takes twice as long. That's the way it is. And I suppose I was always a bit realistic. You see, even as a child, I had to come with grips with my own limitations. At that stage, it was asthma. And I grew up during the war, so there were no cars or anything like that. So we played on the street. I couldn't run with the asthma. So I had to say, oh, gee, I can't do that. How do I make a life for myself in it? I can walk forever. So I took up walking, getting the 48A bus out to Ballinteer, going up onto Tree Rock and all the mountains there. They took the breath out of me. They really did. And then, you know, just, why the 48A? Take the 44. Bring out Enniskerry.
Beautiful.
Why stop there? Get the Glendalough bus and the world's your oyster.